In this week's market update, China property fears spill over into global markets, and it's decision time for central banks. Market watchers have been worrying about the Chinese residential property market for several weeks now, but it's taken until this week for the liquidity crisis at the Evergrande property development company to show up on most investors' radars. Evergrande is a big real estate company with a very big debt problem. It owes more than $300 billion to creditors, and this week a key deadline on some of its offshore bonds arrives. The company is China's second biggest property developer by sales, and two-thirds of its debt is cash that customers have paid towards homes that have not yet been completed. While this looked like a company-specific problem, investors remained relatively calm, but the fear is that the Evergrande story could have wider repercussions. Concerns are rising about the health of China's property market more generally and the impact that could have on other sectors such as banks and insurers with a heavy exposure to property. Evergrande shares fell by as much as 19% at the start of this week's trading in Hong Kong. It's now down 85% this year, and its fall this week saw the Hang Seng Index drop 3.5% on Monday, bringing to more than 12% the Hong Kong market's decline so far this year. So, what is Evergrande and what might its problems mean more generally? Well, founded in 1996, Evergrande is big. A member of the Fortune 500 list of the world's largest companies, it owns more than 1,300 projects in nearly 300 Chinese cities. More than 12 million Chinese homeowners live in a property built by Evergrande. It also has interests in electric vehicles, healthcare, TV and film, food and insurance. Having run up big debts over the years, the company is now struggling to service them. Last week, it warned that a slowing property market in China would put its cash flow and liquidity under pressure. It's consequently trying to sell assets to shore up its balance sheet. Concerns have risen after several of Evergrande's subsidiaries failed to repay wealth management products, which have been a major source of short-term funding. It's this dependence on short-term funding that has drawn comparisons with the financial crisis and the collapse of banks like Lehman Brothers 13 years ago. Others think this is wide of the mark. We just don't know yet. The Evergrande problem has come at just the wrong time for investors. It's hit the headlines in the same week that a string of central banks is making key decisions about whether or not to tighten monetary policy in the face of rising inflation. At the same time, a fourth wave of COVID infections in the US has confirmed that the pandemic is still very much with us. We're also in the historically tricky September-October period when markets have often suffered corrections. This is why Evergrande is something that investors around the world are watching closely. Shares in Europe were notably weak at the start of this week, and all eyes are on whether the crisis will spill over into US markets, which until recently have been trading at all-time highs. Within China itself, property is a hugely important market, which has boomed in recent decades as part of the mass migration of workers from the countryside to cities. If property prices fall sharply, that would have a big impact on China's banks and insurers. One of these, Ping An, saw its shares fall more than 8% on Monday, despite its apparent reassurance that it holds no Evergrande debt or equity. Other sectors in the spotlight as a result of the unfolding Evergrande crisis include commodities, where iron ore slumped last week down 20% on the back of government curbs on steel production and fears for China's property market, a massive source of demand for steel. Falling commodity prices have naturally spilled over into the big mining stocks. Anglo American fell 6% at the open on Monday. Evergrande is just one other thing for central banks to consider this week, as the most important ones, notably the Federal Reserve, Bank of England and Bank of Japan, meet to set rates and make key decisions about the future of monetary policy. Top of mind is when the Fed will begin tapering its $120 billion of bond purchases, a key part of the US central bank's pandemic stimulus program. At the recent Jackson Hole summit, the Fed's chair, Jay Powell, indicated that rising inflation and an improving jobs market was paving the way for the winding down of support. With inflation above 5% in America, that part of the target has already been met. The labour market is less clear-cut. Also in the spotlight at this week's Fed meeting will be the so-called dot plots, which indicate the forecast for the future path of interest rates by individual rate setters. This month's report will, for the first time, show expectations about rates in 2024. There's a growing expectation now that the first rate hike could come before the end of next year, with three hikes in 2023 and another three in 2024. On this side of the pond, the main focus of attention will be the recent rapid rise in inflation from 2% to 3.2%, the highest rate since 2012 and the fastest rate of growth since records began in the 1990s. At the last meeting, Bank Governor Andrew Bailey indicated that some tightening would be required to contain inflationary pressures. Investors now think the first hike could come as soon as next May. So, how's all this showing up in stock markets? Well, if you look back across the past couple of years, shares rose above their 50-day moving average, a common measure of the market's momentum, shortly into the V-shaped recovery in March and April 2020, and they broadly speaking stayed there. There have been a few tests of that support level, particularly last summer before the vaccines were confirmed, but for the last year or so, shares have risen steadily. The longer-term momentum measure, the 200-day moving average, has also remained well below the current level of the market. For that to be breached, the S&P 500 would have to fall to just over 4,100 from today's 4,400 or so. That would be a 10% correction from the recent peak of 4,546. Beneath the surface, the market has actually been performing rather less well than the headline index level might suggest. That's because the market is being driven to a large extent by the performance of a handful of big growth stocks. Strip those out and you can see that now only 44% of S&P 500 stocks are currently trading above their 50-day moving average. Back in March, 92% were. Now, a lot of money has flowed into shares in the past 18 months, nearly $1 trillion into equity funds and ETFs. So if the moving averages are breached, there might be some selling pressure from recent investors who are now looking to limit their losses. Of course, even if there is an autumn correction this year, it's worth remembering that these are par for the course, even when the market is enjoying a long bull run. There are still plenty of good reasons to be positive on shares, even during this seasonally nervous time. First, in an environment of very low bond yields, which is likely to persist, shares continue to offer the best available option for many investors. Some call it TINA, or there is no alternative. Second, company profits continue to be strong. There aren't many results at the moment as we're between earnings seasons, but the forecast is still for nearly 10% earnings growth next year, when comparisons start to become a bit more normal post-pandemic. Third, economic growth is still above average. Again, looking at next year, when things are less distorted by the recovery from COVID, growth of maybe 5% for the US economy looks possible. And finally, whatever happens in terms of monetary stimulus, interest rates are likely to remain below the inflation rate for the foreseeable future. Negative real rates are good for shares. And finally, dipping in and out of the market on fears of a correction is risky because it involves two decisions, when to get out and when to get back in again. The second is even harder to get right than the first.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.